Chapter 12. The man with a beard but no hair stood up from the concierge desk, his knees bumping against the little bells that had sent the Baudelaire orphans on their errands. The woman with hair but no beard pointed a finger at the three children that looked as crooked as she was. The finger had been broken long ago in a dispute over a game of backgammon, which is another story that would take at least 13 books to describe. But in the Baudelaire story, the finger only made this brief appearance, as it pointed at the children in alarm.
"The Baudelaires have taken off their blindfolds," cried the villainous woman in her low, deep voice.
"Yes," agreed the villainous man in his hoarse voice. "They're guilty of contempt of court."
"We certainly are," Violet agreed fiercely. "This court is worthless and dishonorable."
"Two of the judges are notorious villains," Klaus announced over the gasps of the crowd.
"Peek,"
Sunny cried.
"Nobody peek," ordered the man with a beard but no hair. "Anyone who peeks will be turned over to the authorities."
"Take off your blindfolds," Violet begged the crowd. "Count Olaf is kidnapping Justice Strauss this very moment." cried Justice Strauss in agreement from behind the tape.
"Justice Strauss is enjoying a piece of saltwater taffy," the woman with hair but no beard said quickly. "That's why she's talking in hums."
"She's not enjoying anything," Klaus cried. "If there are any volunteers in the crowd, take off your blindfolds and help us."
"The children are trying to trick you," said the man with a beard but no hair. "Keep your blindfolds on."
"Yes," cried the woman with hair but no beard. "They're trying to get all noble people arrested by the authorities."
"Real McCoy,"
Sunny yelled. "I think the children might be telling the truth," Jerome Squalor said hesitantly.
"Those brats are liars," Esme snapped. "They're worse than my ex-boyfriend."
"I believe them," Charles said, scratching at his blindfold. "They've experienced villainy before."
"I don't," Sir announced.
The children could not tell if he was wearing a blindfold underneath the cloud of smoke that still hung over his head.
"And nothing but trouble."
"They're telling the truth,"
cried Frank, probably, unless it was Ernest.
"They're lying,"
cried Ernest, most likely, although I suppose it could have been Frank.
"They're good students," said Mr. Amora.
"They're lousy administrative assistants," said Vice Principal Nero.
"They're bank robbers," said Mrs. Bass,
whose blindfold was covering her small, narrow mask.
"Bank robbers?" Mr. Poe asked. "Gad, who said that?"
"They're guilty,"
cried the man with a beard but no hair, although the High Court wasn't supposed to reach a verdict until all the evidence had been examined.
"They're innocent,"
cried Hal.
"They're freaks,"
screamed Hugo.
"They're twisted,"
shrieked Colette.
"They're right-handed,"
yelled Kevin.
"They're headlines,"
screeched Geraldine Julien.
"They're escaping,"
said the woman with hair but no beard, and this at least was a true statement. Violet, Klaus and Sunny realized that the crowd was going to do nothing that would stop Count Olaf from dragging Justice Strauss away from the trial, and that the people in the lobby would fail them, as so many noble people had failed them before. As the volunteers and villains argued around them, the children made their way quickly and stealthily away from the bench and toward Justice Strauss and Count Olaf, who was picking up the harpoon gun. If you've ever wanted one more cookie than people said you could have, then you know how difficult it is to move quickly and stealthily at the same time. But if you've had as much experience as the Baudelaires in dodging the activities of people who were shouting at you, then you know that with enough practice, you can move quickly and stealthily just about anywhere, including across an enormous domed lobby while a crowd calls for your capture.
"We must capture them," called a voice in the crowd. "It will take a village to capture the Baudelaires," shrieked Mrs. Morrow. "We can't see them through our blindfolds."
"We don't want to be guilty of contempt of court,"
yelled Mr. Lesko.
"Let's feel our way toward the hotel entrance so they can't escape."
"The authorities are guarding the entrance,"
the man with a beard but no hair reminded the crowd. "The Baudelaires are running toward the elevators. Capture them."
"But don't capture anyone else who happens to be standing near the elevators,"
added the woman with hair but no beard, looking hurriedly at Olaf. The sliding doors of an elevator began to open, and the Baudelaires moved as quickly and stealthily as they could through the crowd, who were reaching out blindly in all directions.
"Search the entire hotel," said the villainous man, "and bring us anyone who you find suspicious." "We'll tell you if they're villains or not," said the villainous woman. "After all, you can't make such judgments yourselves." "Wrong!"
The enormous clock of the Hotel des Numans, the stuff of legend, announced 1 o'clock, thundering through the room of the blindfolded leading the blindfolded, just as the 3 siblings reached the elevators. Count Olaf had already dragged Justice Strauss inside and was hurriedly pressing the button that closes the elevator doors, but Sunny stuck out one of her feet and held them open, which is something only very brave people attempt. Olaf leaned forward to whisper threateningly at the Baudelaires.
"Let me go," he whispered threateningly, "or I'll announce to everyone where you are."
Olaf, however, was not the only person who could whisper threateningly.
"Let us in," Violet whispered threateningly, "or we'll announce to everyone where you are."
"Ah,"
Justice Strauss said. Count Olaf glared at the children, and the children glared back, until at last the villain stepped aside and let the Baudelaires join him and his prisoner in the elevator.
"Going down?"
he asked, and the children blinked. They had been so intent on escaping the crowd and reaching the judge that they hadn't considered exactly where they might go afterward.
"We're going wherever you go," Klaus said.
"I have a few errands to run," Olaf said. "Ha! First, I'm going down to the basement to retrieve the sugar bowl. Ha! Then I'm going up to the roof to retrieve the medusoid mycelium. Ha! Then I'm going down to the lobby to expose the fungus to everyone in the lobby. Ah! Ha! And then, finally, I'm going up to the roof to escape without being seen by the authorities."
"You all fail," Sunny said,
and Olaf glared down at the youngest Baudelaire.
"Your mother told me the same thing," he said. "Ah! But one day, when I was 7 years old..."
The elevator's doors slid open as it arrived at the basement, and the villain interrupted himself and quickly dragged Justice Strauss out into the hallway.
"Follow me," he called back to the Baudelaires.
The children, of course, did not want to follow this horrid man any more than they wanted to put cream cheese in their hair, but they looked at one another and could not think of what else they could do.
"You can't retrieve the sugar bowl," Violet said. "You'll never open the vernacularly fastened door."
"Can't I?" Olaf asked, stopping at room 025.
The lock was still stretched securely across the door, as it had been when Sunny left it.
"This hotel is like an enormous library," the villain said. "But you can find any item in a library if you have one thing."
"Catalogue?"
Sunny asked.
"No,"
Count Olaf replied, and pointed the harpoon gun at the judge.
"A hostage."
With that, he turned to Justice Strauss and ripped the tape off her mouth very slowly, so it would sting as much as possible.
"You're going to help me open this lock," he informed her, with a wicked smile.
"I will do nothing of the sort," Justice Strauss replied. "The Baudelaires will help me drag you back up to the lobby, where justice can be served."
"Justice isn't being served in the lobby," Olaf growled, "or anywhere else in the world."
"Don't be so sure of that,"
Justice Strauss said, and reached behind her back. The Baudelaires looked hopefully at what she was holding, but their hopes fell when they saw what it was.
"Odious lusting after finance," she read out loud,
holding up Jerome Squalor's comprehensive history of injustice.
"There's enough evidence in here to put you in jail for the rest of your life."
"Justice Strauss,"
Violet said. "Your fellow judges on the High Court are associates of Count Olaf. Those villains will never put Olaf in jail."
"It can't be," Justice Strauss gasped. "I've known them for years. I've told them everything that was happening to you children, and they were always very interested."
"Of course they were interested, you fool," Count Olaf said. "They passed along all that information to me, so I could catch up with the orphans. You've been helping me all along without even knowing it. Aha!"
Justice Strauss leaned against an ornamental vase, and her eyes filled with tears.
"I failed you again, Baudelaire's," she said. "No matter how I've tried to help you, I've only put you in more danger. I thought justice would be served if you told the High Court your story, but..."
"No one's interested in their story," Count Olaf said scornfully. "Even if you wrote down every last detail, no one would read such a dreadful thing. I've triumphed over the orphans and over any other person foolish or noble enough to stand in my way. It's the unravelling of my story, or as the French say, the noblesse oblige."
"Denouement,"
Sunny corrected. But Olaf acted as though he had not heard, and turned his attention to the lock on the door.
"That idiot Sub-Sub said the first phrase is a description of a medical condition that all three Baudelaire children share," he muttered, and turned to Justice Strauss. "Tell me what it is, or prepare to eat harpoon."
"Never," Justice Strauss said. "I may have failed these children, but I won't fail VFD. You'll never get the sugar bowl, no matter what terrible threats you make."
"I'll tell you what the first phrase is," Klaus said calmly. And his siblings looked at him in astonishment. Justice Strauss looked at him in amazement. Even Count Olaf seemed a little puzzled.
"You will?"
he asked.
"Certainly," Klaus said. "It's just like you said, Count Olaf. Every noble person has failed us. Why should we protect the sugar bowl?"
"Klaus!" Violet and Sunny cried in simultaneous astonishment.
"No!"
Justice Strauss cried in solitary amazement. Count Olaf looked a little puzzled again, but then shrugged his dusty shoulders.
"Okay," he said. "Tell me what medical condition you and your orphan siblings share."
"We're allergic to peppermints," Klaus said,
and quickly typed ALLERGICTOPEPPERMINTS into the lock. Immediately, there was a muted clicking sound from the typewriter keyboard.
"It's warming up,"
Count Olaf said in a delighted wheeze.
"Get out of the way, Four Eyes. The second phrase is the weapon that left me an orphan, and I can type that one in myself. P-O-Y-Z.
"Wait,"
Klaus said, before Olaf could touch the keyboard. "That can't be right. Those letters don't spell anything."
"Spelling doesn't count,"
said the Count.
"Yes, it does," Klaus said. "Tell me what the weapon is that left you an orphan, and I'll type it in for you."
Count Olaf gave Klaus a slow smile that made the Baudelaires shudder.
"Certainly I'll tell you," he said. "It was poison darts."
Klaus looked at his sisters, and then in grim silence typed POISONDARTS into the lock, which began to buzz quietly. Count Olaf's eyes shone brightly as he stared at the wires of the lock, which began to shake as they stretched around the hinges of the laundry room door.
"It's working,"
he said, and ran his tongue over his filthy teeth.
"The sugar bowl is so close. I can taste it."
Klaus took his commonplace book from his pocket and read his notes intently for a moment. Then he turned to Justice Strauss.
"Give me that book, please," he said, pointing to Jerome Squalor's book. "The third phrase is the famous unfathomable question in the best-known novel by Richard Wright. Richard Wright was an American novelist of the realist school, whose writings illuminated the disparities in race relations. It's likely his work is quoted in a comprehensive history of injustice.
You can't read that entire book, Count Olaf said. The crowd will find us before you finish the first chapter.
I look in the index, Klaus said, just like I did at Aunt Josephine's, when we decoded her note and found her hiding place.
I always wondered how you did that,
Olaf said, sounding almost as if he admired the middle Baudelaire's research skills. Klaus paged to the back of the book, where the index can usually be found. An index, as I'm sure you know, is a list of everything a book contains and where each item can be found. Right, Richard, Klaus read aloud. Unfathomable question in Native Sun, page 581.
That's the 581st page, Count Olaf explained,
for no one's benefit, a phrase which here means, even though that was clear to everyone in the hallway. Klaus flipped hurriedly to the proper page and scanned it quickly, his eyes blinking behind his glasses. I found it, he said quietly. It's quite an interesting question, actually.
No one cares about interesting questions, Olaf said. Type it in this instant.
Klaus smiled and began typing furiously into the typewriter keyboard. His sisters stepped forward, and each of them put a hand on their brother's shoulder.
Why do this? Sunny asked.
Sunny's right, Violet said. Why are you helping Olaf get into the laundry room? The middle Baudelaire typed the last word into the keyboard, which was T-O-P-P-L-I-N-G, and then looked at his sisters. Because the sugar bowl isn't there, he said, and pushed open the door.
What do you mean? Count Olaf demanded. Of course the sugar bowl is in there.
I'm afraid Olaf is right, Justice Strauss said. You heard what Dewey said. When the crows were shot with the harpoon gun, they fell onto the bird paper and dropped the sugar bowl into the funnel.
So it would appear, Klaus said slyly.
Enough nonsense, Count Olaf shouted,
waving his harpoon gun in the air and stomping into the laundry room. In just a few moments, however, it was clear that the middle Baudelaire had spoken the truth. The laundry room of the Hotel des Neumonts was very small, just large enough to hold a few washing and drying machines, some piles of dirty sheets, and a few plastic jugs of what were presumably some extremely flammable chemicals, just as Dewey had said. A metal tube hung over one corner of the ceiling, allowing steam from the machines to float up the tube and outside, but there was no sign that a sugar bowl had fallen through the funnel and dropped out the metal tube to the wooden floor of the laundry room. With a hoarse, angry roar, Count Olaf opened the doors of the washing and drying machines and slammed them closed, and then picked up the piles of dirty sheets and sent them tumbling onto the floor.
Where is it?
He snarled, drops of spit flying from his furious mouth.
Where's the sugar bowl?
It's a secret, Klaus said. A secret that died with Dewey Denouement. Count Olaf turned to face the Baudelaire orphans, who had never seen him look this frightening. His eyes had never gleamed as brightly, and his smile had never been as peccant, a word which here means so hungry for evil deeds as to be unhealthy. It was not unlike the face of Dewey had been as he sank into the water, as if the villain's own wickedness was causing him great pain.
He won't be the only volunteer who dies today, he said in a terrible whisper. I'll destroy every soul in his hotel, sugar bowl or no sugar bowl. I'll unleash the medusoid mycelium, and volunteers and villains alike will perish in agony. My comrades have failed me as often as my enemies, and I'm eager to be rid of them. Then I'll push that boat off the roof and sail away with...
You can't push that boat off the roof, Violet said. It would never survive the fall, due to the force of gravity.
I suppose I'll have to add the force of gravity to my list of enemies,
Olaf muttered. I'll get that boat off the roof, Violet said calmly, and her siblings looked at her in astonishment. Justice Strauss looked at her in amazement. Even Count Olaf seemed a little puzzled. You will? He asked. Certainly, Violet said. It's just like you said, Count Olaf. Every noble person has failed us. Why shouldn't we help you escape? Violet! Klaus and Sunny cried, in simultaneous astonishment. No! Justice Strauss cried, in solitary amazement. Count Olaf still looked puzzled, but gave the eldest Baudelaire a shrug.
Okay, he said. What do you need?
A few of those dirty sheets, Violet said. I'll tie them together and make a drag chute, just like I did in the Mortmain Mountains when I stopped the caravan from falling off the mountain.
I always wondered how you did that,
Olaf said, looking at the eldest Baudelaire as if he respected her inventing skills. Violet walked into the laundry room and gathered some sheets into her arms, trying to choose the least dirty of the bunch. Let's go to the roof, she said quietly. Her siblings stepped forward, and each of them put a hand on their sister's shoulder.
Why do this? Sunny asked.
Sunny's right, Klaus said. Why are you helping Olaf escape? The eldest Baudelaire looked at the sheets in her hand, and then at her siblings.
Because he'll take us with him, she said.
Why would I do that? Olaf asked.
Because you need more than a one-person crew, Violet said slyly, and we need to leave this hotel without being spotted by the authorities.
I suppose that's true, Olaf said. Well, you would have ended up in my clutches in any case. Come along.
Not yet, Sunny said. One more thing.
Everyone stared at the youngest Baudelaire, who was wearing an expression so unfathomable that even her siblings could not tell what she was thinking.
One more thing,
Count Olaf repeated, staring down at Sunny.
What could that be?
The two eldest Baudelaires looked at their sister and felt a cold ripple in their stomachs, as if a stone had somehow been dropped straight into the siblings. It is very difficult to make one's way in this world without being wicked at one time or another, when the world's way is so wicked to begin with. When unfathomable situations arose in the lives of the Baudelaires, and they did not know what to do, the children often felt as if they were balancing very delicately on top of something very fragile and very dangerous, and that if they weren't careful, they might fall a very long way into a sea of wickedness. Violet felt this delicate balance when she offered to help Count Olaf escape, even though it meant that she and her siblings could escape too, and Klaus felt this delicate balance when he helped Olaf unlock the laundry room door, even though the sugar bowl was not to be found inside. And of course all three Baudelaire orphans felt this delicate balance when they thought about Dewey Denouement, and that terrible instant when the weapon in their hands brought about his death. But as Sunny answered Count Olaf's question, the clock of the Hotel Denouement struck two wrongs, and her siblings wondered if they had lost their balance at last and were tumbling away from all the noble people in the world.
Burn down hotel, Sunny said.
And all three Baudelaire orphans felt as if they were falling.